serious abuse.
All right, let's start up. So last time we saw, we've been discussing the right of a poel to renege and to back out of the agreement without a penalty. The last thing we saw was the position of the tour. The tour had a very expansive interpretation of Yad Poel Ahol Yona. The standard view from the Rambam that makes its way into Shulchan Aruch is that when the worker backs out, it means that even if the cost of labor went up such that the employer has to pay more to finish the job, the employee still gets what he was promised, right? Quantum merit, prorated to the amount of work that he actually did. So for example, if he was hired to do a full job for eight, he does half, cost of labor goes up to six, let's say. Cost of labor goes up such that it's going to cost the Baal Bayis six to finish it. The Poel is still entitled to walk home with four. So even though the Baal Bayis is going to have a net cost, the Poel still gets what he was promised. That's how the Rambam interprets Yad Poel Ahol Yona. The Tur had a different reading. The Tur said that not only does Yad Poel Ahol Yona guarantee... Not only does it guarantee that the Poel gets what he was promised, it works to his advantage such that if the cost of labor goes down, the Poel could actually get a windfall from breaching. Right? How does that work? So suppose he was hired for eight for the whole job. He does half. So the Rambam would say he's entitled to four. The Tur argues that if the cost of labor goes down such that the Baal Bayis could complete it for $2 an hour, the Poel walks away with the whole contract less the amount it costs to complete it. So the Poel is going to walk away with six in that case, not four. Right?
Where's that Rambam?
Just look at the Rambam where he paskens that Gemara. It's the standard reads. The Shulchan Aruch reads it also. The Tur is a chiddush in reading Yad Poel Ahol Yona. So it's a chiddush in that it shifts the discussion. It's not just that the Poel could walk out at no loss. The point is the Poel could actually gain from this. So why the Poel should gain was the topic of discussion in the WhatsApp just before Adam joined. Yoni was tweeting from Vermont this time. Switzerland. So the way I was interpreting the Tur is that this is a strong indication of what I've been calling the strong contract theory that we've been seeing. So if you recall, the strong contract theory, and this, Ben, this is what we spoke about last week, is that you view a contractual agreement almost as a sales of goods. So if I hire Noah to work for me for the day, then it's as if I am transferring a right of payment to him right now. So if you sell a house, it's like you're transferring a house. And when I hire Noah, it's as if I'm transferring the payment to him right now. He's entitled to it in exchange for doing work. If I breach and don't provide him the work, Noah remains entitled to the compensation that I transfer to him when the contract is consummated. So I think the idea of the Tur is that the Poel, even in a case of breach, is still entitled to collect the full value of the contract, less the cost that the Baal Bayis has to complete it. So I think that's one way of explaining the Tur's position. As I mentioned in the WhatsApp discussion, what we saw actually last time was the Shach is very upset by the Tur's position. Why is the Shach upset? Does anybody remember his actual objection? Yeah, Eitan?
We said that the Shach isn't thinking in terms of contract because the agreement is centered on how much work the person has done, and therefore he should only get four and not get six.
Yeah. He said, Lama yiyeh yad hapoel ahol yona le'inyan sheyitein lo yoser mimash hasachar imo. It's never reasonable that the Poel should get a windfall for breaching. So maybe the halacha is going to protect him that he shouldn't suffer a loss, but it's not sensible to say that he should gain. And again, I think the strong contract theory is a way of explaining the Tur's position against the Shach's criticism. The reason why he's gaining is not because he should gain from his breach, just because the way you might say the halacha views the transfer of entitlement when a contract is initiated is the same as and a transfer of goods. So the Poel already owns that part of the contract. If he breaches, he's got to cover the Baal Bayis' costs. And when the cost of labor goes down, those costs might be minimal, right? Just the $2 to complete it. But the Poel is going to walk away with six. Ben, you had a comment on this?
Can you relate this to just like how the Shach and Tur individually view breaching? It seems like the Tur doesn't view breaching perhaps as a negative thing. As long as you're able to
at least the
Poel's
breach, right? At least the Poel's
breach is not, and the Tur seems the shock seems uncomfortable. The breach is something inherently negative, and therefore you should benefit from something.
Yeah, it's an interesting. It's a good suggestion. I'd only caution that in the shock's language here on the bottom of page 3, and in Shin Lama Gimel Yates, the shock just says, Lama Yia Yada Pola Hal Yona. It's like, why should the poel gain from this? It's not like he doesn't say, oh, lo yehe chode niskar. It's like, how could we reward a wrongdoer? So it seems like it's less of a problem about how could you gain and profit from a breach, and it's more of a problem, this is not a sensible interpretation of Yad Pol HaHol Yona. Okay. That's the sense that I get from the shock. Now, the Ketzos and Simen Shin Lama Gimel defends the Torah's reading from the Shach's criticism. Now, does anybody remember what the Ketzos says in Shin Lama Gimel? Yoni, you want to tell us?
He says that the Torah is similar to the Rambam's case by an Eved Ivri.
Yes.
That an Eved Ivri, the thing is that it gets certain values $100 a year, as he wants to cancel the contract halfway through. So let's say if now his own valuation has gone up or gone down, so now he gets to pay back the Eved for the rest of the remaining year based on the lower value.
Right. So the Ketzos points to a paradigm of Eved Ivri. Anybody learned the first paragraph of Kedushin? Anybody? Yeah. No, you're a Kedushin man?
Yeah.
You're also?
Not
right. Well? Right, this is just after the Avadim starts, like on Yadalit, right? So the din is that an Eved Ivri can buy out the duration of his contract from the employer. That's known as Giron Kesef. Right, so if the Eved Ivri sells himself for 6 years, and midway through he wants to buy out the rest of his term, he could, you know, he could literally pay for his freedom and just pay the remaining value of his contract. But the halacha says, this is what the Shachanar, this is what the Gemara in Kedushin Daf Chaf says, and it's passing by the Rambam, that the Eved always gets the better offer in buying out the rest of his contract. So, right, Yoni?
Yeah.
If he was initially worth a lot at the time of the sale, the beginning of the 6 years, and then his price depreciates, right? So the value of his labor goes down. The poet could just buy out the rest of his contract based off the present value, the lower value of his contract. And if vice versa, he was worth a little bit at the beginning sale, but then the price of the value of his labor goes up, the Eved gets the better part of the offer, Yada Eved al Halyona, and he could buy himself out for his initial value, pro rata at his initial value, not his current value. So in deciding which value to look at, his present or his previous value, we always take the lower amount to, you know, give the Eved a bit of an edge in Giron Kesef. So the Ketzos says, given what we know, and this is literally the first substantive sugya that we saw this year, given what we know that a poel, a day worker, is a kind of an Eved, so the same rules of like Yad Eved al Hel Yona for Giron Kesef should apply to poel. Right? Literally, and this I think is where it leans into what Yoni was suggesting in the WhatsApp discussion, that, you know, maybe the halacha really just is always looking to give the poel the best deal possible. There are different ways of evaluating the worth of the poel's labor. And so the Ketzos says you'll always construe the evaluation in a way that's to the poel's benefit, based off the paradigm of Eved Ivri. Yoni, does that make that a fair way of presenting the Ketzos? It's slightly different than what you were suggesting on the WhatsApp. Right? Because the idea is not that we'll evaluate. So in this in the Ketzos' case of Giron Kesef, you're either looking to the beginning value or to the end value and just allowing the poel to buy himself out at the lower of the two. In our case, it's more complicated than that. Right? Because in our case, the Torah is saying if he had a normal value at the beginning and then the cost of labor goes down, the poel is going to get more than his normal value at the beginning. Right, so it's not like we're just looking to either the beginning value or to the end value. We're actually going to construe it in this new way that says price out how much the Balabais was going to pay him and just deduct the amount that it's going to cost the Baal HaBayis to finish the job. So the ketosis paradigm is not really symmetric to the case that he's trying to justify. It's not like we're just looking at either the beginning price or the end price and picking the lower of the two, right? So I think you have to actually go further and say the ketosis makes sense. The ketosis substantive point is that just like an Eved Ivri is gufo kanui, that is considered to be a sale of the person, like a full transfer of an entitlement, so too in the case of a regular contract of a poel, it's considered as if the poel was sold, and now he's entitled to the full payment, that full value. If he wants to buy himself out, he just has to cover the Baal HaBayis costs. That's where I think the important point of the ketosis comes in the analogy to Eved Ivri, which bolsters the strong contract view. But the actual cases are actually a little different in how you attach Yad Poel al Yonah. Is that clear to everyone, or feel free to raise a question? No.
Yeah, yeah. Why would you connect them besides for like the conceptual parallelism? Like what motivates him to connect Eved Ivri to
Poel? So you'll see one of the first sigils that we saw in the beginning of the year was to try to. We looked at all these makoros that view a Poel himself as a kind of Eved. And we'll actually see some more of that today. So like in the halacha's conception, a day laborer is kind of a servant. He doesn't have autonomy. And one of the, a lot of the dinim is the halacha is trying to protect his rights and give him like more freedom so that he's less of an Eved. But yeah, it's strange. One view that we saw in the beginning of the year, I don't know if anybody remembers, I think it was the Marit, if I'm not mistaken. We thought, yeah, the only difference between a Poel and an Eved is the duration of their employment. But like fundamentally they're the same entity. And you can see that. You can see vestiges of that here in the Mixos. Eitan.
So you just mentioned in explaining the Ketosis and understanding the tour that there's clearly a connection between a poet and a slave, which we discussed at length over the years. So I'm just wondering, when we said that we're looking out for the best of the poel, despite the fact that this doesn't apply to the Eved, right? We said the Eved is just the beginning of the end, but the poel is actually something different.
Right.
Could it be that that same idea is still rooted in the fact that we view a poel like an Eved?
For sure. I think the whole idea that Yad Poel al Yonah, right, is based off Kili B'nei Yisrael Avadim B'lo Avadim La'Avadim, which is what we're about to see. That we want to create the best possible conditions for the Poel such that he won't be like an Eved. Yeah, that's what we're about to see. Adam?
This is interesting. The Kisos brings up that the reason, or at least he thinks the reason that or more makel in terms of an Eved Ivri is rooted in the Avar al Koli B'nei.
Yeah.
Right, so that makes sense.
Meaning we don't want him to be this in this bad situation of being an Eved to a person and not a free person.
That makes sense in the case of having the Eved Ivri pay himself at a lower price because then you essentially lower the duration of his avos.
Right.
But in the case of Paul, it doesn't make a difference. You've not changed his avos. He's out. How much he gets from it is completely irrelevant.
Well, I think the idea is you want to minimize his exit costs to make it as easy as possible for him to extricate himself.
Yeah,
I don't know if you want to encourage him, or at least you want to remove all deterrence. Mm-hmm. So you can think of it, I'll mention this soon, like there are all these costs associated with leaving your job, right? It's I don't know if anyone here reads like... political philosophy. Where's Cole? Is Cole on the call? Is he here yet?
No.
Cole, have you heard of
him? Right. I'll wait for Cole to come. When Cole comes, then we'll...
there's a cyclical employment.
Yeah, so there's all these worries about the exit costs for laborers. You know, people say employers, whatever terms they agree with their workers, those got to be their fair terms. Because, like, why else is the worker still in the job, right? If they don't like the terms of corporate employment, let them leave and go elsewhere. But the response to that is like, no, the exit costs are so high, right? Especially for like a low income earner. You know, it's really difficult for you to give up your salary for a few days to look at alternative employment opportunities. And so like the high exit costs actually create like a kind of like servitude relationship, even though prima facie it looks like everything is by consent and volition. I think that's a philosophical way of looking at it. Right. I'll circulate there's a good article, a good paper by Elizabeth Anderson. I don't know if you
take your word for it.
I'll circulate it. She gave the Tanner lecture, like this kind of consideration. So when Cole comes on, he'll weigh in.
On legal loopholes?
Well?
On legal loopholes?
The Tanner lecture? No. That's Eitan's specialty. Legal loopholes.
It's not mine.
Yeah, Eitan. Right. Okay, good. Does anybody have comments on that part? Any other comments on that part of the discussion? No? Okay, good. Yakir or Gabe, you have comments on that part of the discussion? Nope. All right. Gabe?
Welcome back. Good to see you.
All right. Good.
How was the Swiss Alps?
Okay. So I want to move on now to the discussion of bottom of page 4, top of page 5. So the Gemara that we saw on the bottom, the Gemara in Ayin Zayin and Ayin Vav and the Gemara in Daf Yud, they all quote this pasuk of Kili b'nei Yisrael avadim v'la avadim l'avadim. The Gemara draws two substantive conclusions from that. In Daf Yud, the Gemara says that it means a poel has a right to reneg, right? Or more precisely, he has a hofeldian privilege. He's under no duty not to reneg. And correlatively, the employer has no claim right that the poel remain, right? So the first is that, so one part of it is that the poel has a privilege to back out. And secondly, that when the poel backs out, yadol ha'al yona. Right, so the poel actually has a claim right for the highest kind of compensation. Now, in the Rambam's view, that means that he gets quantum merit, the original contract price for the tour, right, as we saw, can mean a bit of a windfall for the poel. So I want to raise, two main questions now. So maybe really three questions on this analysis. So the first is, when does this halacha apply? Are there exceptions? Right, so if you just read the Gemara, it sounds like a poel could always back out. And you could see that that would do violence to employment relationships, contractual relationships. I mean, think about it. You hire somebody and you rely on them and they could really just back out. Right? You're like, no, what good is the agreement if they always have this right to renege? So what are the exceptions? Now, there is one prominent exception in the Gemara. Most of the exceptions we'll talk about today are in the Rishonim and postgame. But what's the exception in the Gemara? Tavar Aved. Right, if the Bala Bais is going to suffer an irreparable loss from the Poel's breach, then the Poel does not have a right to renege. And that's going to be our next sugya that we look at carefully. So the Gemara does have that very important connection. So there's an important limitation on this, right? And I think that's quite equitable.
Well, he doesn't have a right to renege, just he still is financially
alive. So
what?
He doesn't have a right to renege. Well, we'll see, actually. It's not clear. Some postgame are going to say that he doesn't have a right to...
He has to remain in specific performance?
Yeah, he has a duty to perform. Right. Whether will compel him...
Wait, what? Really?
Who the Gemara says,
Mitano?
Socha lava matan.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Well, that might be indicative of the fact that he has a duty to be there. So yeah, we'll see that.
So aside of political philosophy, the same issue in terms of the employer has to go to the market and find more people to work.
Yeah, right. So he's going to be...
Is that always an associated cost?
Finding other employees. Yeah, so we'll see. We'll talk about that when we talk about the Dabar Aved standard and part of the duty to mitigate also. And yeah, so we'll get to that. But for now, we can say generally a Dabar Aved is an exception to this rule, already carved out in the Gemara, that the poel doesn't have the special right in those cases. And what exactly his duties are, whether he has to compensate the Bala Bais for costs, whether he has a duty to perform, we'll see when we get deeper into that.
We spoke about this last week, and I'm sure we'll talk about it more when we talk about the sugya specifically. So is that a moral thing? Is it a moral obligation because like, you feel bad that the guy's going to lose money, or because he's losing money, that's why you have to...
Yeah, so hold up. Well, when we get to Dabar Aved, we'll look carefully at that question. Yeah, pass around the munchkins in honor.
For our sake, please. You're on this side.
Yeah.
I want to warn everyone, Grandma's has a seat. And the other one is Great Penny. So maybe 8 slices that once you go to. It seems clean in there. I don't know if the food can taste good.
These things are all political anyway. I mean, it's like they get a C and then they, they appeal and then they get their back of the neck.
That was my first time.
You're going to die.
It's so annoying. It's really, it's disturbing. All right, sorry.
Okay, I got Golan had an issue a few years ago.
I think Grandma gets her.
They were closed. They had to see her. Then like the next day, appealed it. And the next day, they're back.
I think Grandma gets her ingredients from Wuhan, China. From that market.
Well, they're an A now. They were great pendant for years at Chinese store. Now they're an A. I don't know what they did.
The point is, the munchkins are probably the healthiest thing you'll eat here in the Heights.
They're also
Wuhan
problems.
The Wuhan problem is definitely not getting an A.
C's for coronavirus.
That's right.
Well, it's a really long digression.
Well?
No, we definitely
cut that from the record.
While we're cutting, anybody want more of
Pour
Adam a little more.
It's not even 12 o'clock. It's gonna be gone.
Okay, so let's look at. So the first question I want to ask is, what are the exceptions? The second question is, what do the exceptions show about the nature of the Poel's privilege to renege in the first place? Right. So you'd think that these exceptions. Here, Ben, pass it back here. It's that. Just don't want the spies from the hallway to see what's going on. So the second question is, what do these exceptions show about the privilege of the Poel to back out in the first place? Right. So it's an interesting thing that the halacha has, that the Poel has this special privilege. By looking at some of the exceptions, that'll shed light on why that halacha exists or what its essence is, both in virtue of like charting where the exceptions apply, but also because we'll see Achronim or Poskim weigh in making arguments for their position as to what the reason for it is. So we're going to look at that. And then the third point I want to make is we'll see that we've seen that there are two dinim associated with Keli b'nei Yisrael avadim v'lo avadim l'avadim. One is the privilege to renege, the Hofeldian privilege to renege, correlative of the Bala Bias not having a claim right that he stay. And secondly, the Poel's claim right to Yadu HaHel Yonah, his entitlement to higher end compensation. And the interesting question is, do those dinim always go together? So, well, you have cases where maybe there's a right to renege based off Kili B'nei Yisrael Avadim, but the Yadu HaHel Yonah may not apply. So in some of the exceptions, we want to look out for where these two different ideas come apart. Okay, so the first exception is mentioned by the Ritva and Bav Metzia in Vav Mebeis, and in a tshuva of the Ritva, bottom of page 4, top of page 5. Anybody remember the Ritva's position? It gets passed into the Beis Yosef. So what's the Ritva's view?
Kenyan.
What?
Kenyan is different.
Yes, so what happens when you have a Kenyan?
Can't be
Chozer, right? So it sounds like the right to renege, the privilege to renege, is limited to employment relationships that function by Haschalas HaMelacha. Right? You know, just in virtue of you had a discussion and you started working for the guy. But if there was a real Maisa Kenyan that was performed, then the Poel would not have a right to, would not have a privilege to back out. That's a huge exception to the rule, right? Almost to the extent that it makes the rule that a Poel has a privilege to back out so limited, right? It's limited to only those cases where there was no Maisa Kenyan performed on the employment. And you might even say, to tap into a different theme that we've had been exploring, that this just reflects on what? The weakness of which contract? A contract consummated through Haschalas HaMelacha. Right? We saw that the halacha artificially views the commencement of performance of Haschalas HaMelacha as a kenyan. Right? We had a whole debate earlier in the year. Is Haschalas HaMelacha on par with other kenyanim, or is it just totally different? You might say that these views that think that a Maisa Kenyan blocks the Poel's privilege of reneging, these views are taking a substantive stance on just the distinction between Haschalas HaMelacha as a very weak kind of Kenyan performance, a very weak kind of Kenyan relationship, and a real kinyan, which is like a strong contractual relationship that can't easily be broken. Okay? So the Ritva's view is that anytime there's a kinyan, the poel cannot back out. So Yoni, why don't you read the first Ritva and I involve in the base? What's his formulation? That's right. He says, had the poel have made a kinyan through Meshicha on the object that he's performing on, then he would not be allowed to back out. Why? So de'uman shemashach kli shenasnu lam lasos. Go on, Yoni. Yeah. So once there's a kinyan to meshichas hakli, he thinks, then the worker himself has a shibud such that eino yachal achzerbo. Right? He's not allowed to back out if he did a kinyan on the kli. This is a bit of a chiddush because he's just saying that doing a meshicha on the kli can be tantamount to a kinyan on the employment relationship. The Ritva is more explicit on ayin hay and base. So you only want to just read that Ritva for us. Yeah, he says all these dinim in the Mishnah about chazara, etc., these only exist when there's no ma'aseh kinyan. If there was a kinyan that governed their relationship, then the poel would be liable for all of these things, right? He wouldn't be allowed to back out, etc. Now, the Beis Yosef quotes a tshuva of the Ritva, which is even more extreme. So what does the tshuva Saritva say? Let's read the tshuva very quickly. Yair, did you get a chance to see it?
I did.
All right, so why don't you read the Shud Ritva Kuf Yud Zayin?
From the beginning?
Yeah, because the way he frames the question itself is important.
Shalta, Ruben Niskar Shimon Shamshu Shana Achad, V'nishtabi Lo Lezeh V'shtar Kinyan Karab, V'tov Shana Ba Lachad,
Yes, that's a very interesting stance taken by the Shoel, right? You can see the Shoel here already had a halachic argument, similar to the argument made by the Shach much later. What's the argument? The argument is that look, the Torah says that there's a privilege of a poel to back out. Torah doesn't distinguish between with kinyan, without a kinyan. So we ought to assume that it's just a carte blanche right. Right? The poel always has this privilege to renege. It's exeris hakasev, and there's no grounds to limit it. That's the Shoel's position. So anytime there's a contractual relationship, even if it's consummated by a kinyan, the Torah says you have a right to back out. The Ritva disagrees. Yeah. And what does he say?
Jump to the tshuva?
Yeah, and you could even skip to halacha rovachas. Yeah, just skip to the tshuva. Tshuva.
Tshuva. V'emet kem yira midivar etosvo kidivar acha. Aval kachmo kubanu yinori harach agadol rav Aaron Halevi zal. V'chein kachal eskini mishmo b'sperach hatocha b'shnayim l'vushosh mokomo. Ki halacha rovacha etzlo.
I love that. He doesn't even know how many times he cited the Ra'ah is saying this. You know, like two or three places.
A bunch of times.
Yeah, it's that. Right. Yeah, so the first thing he says is what, Yair? That the pasuk is limited
to a case of Amira, where there's no kinyan.
Yeah, which is interesting, right? He says, Kedin Poel Shal Torah. It's interesting that he just assumes that the default case in the Torah is when there's no kinyan, right? He thinks when the Torah talks about poelim, it's like a verbal, you know, I asked you to show up, and, you know, you had showed up based off that discussion. That's the Torah's paradigm of poelim, not where there's a kinyan outlining the terms or a kinyan consummating. Yoni, you're smiling because it's just...
It's hard.
What?
I was thinking Yaakov
Avinu didn't
have a kinyan.
There's no kinyan, right? So that's the... He's the paradigm, we're saying. It's the... Yeah, maybe. I don't know where he gets Kedin Poel Shel Torah. Like, where does that come from? That's the Torah's. Like, how do you know what the Torah's paradigm is? But,
well, then there's no like mention of a requirement.
Right. So you're just saying that
absent the requirement, it assumes that the standard doesn't have it again.
Right. Yeah. Could be.
But I think there's an argument also more subtle than that, which is that even if the stomp, you know, Polish and Torah could be either with a kinyan or without a kinyan, once there's a way without a kinyan, why would anyone ever do a kinyan?
Right.
It must be if you're else.
Good. So that's the line here. Aval kol shenishtabed bekinyan letfuye milsa asa shelo yuchalachzar. We have to surmise like the reason why a kinyan. Once you acknowledge that you could have a working relationship, an employment relationship with or without a kinyan, we ought to assume that the reason why you would do a kinyan is to strengthen the relationship such that the poel can't renege. Correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Now, notice he's not saying that it's anything about the metaphysics of an employment relationship with a kinyan that locks the poel in and blocks his right to renege, his privilege to renege. What is it?
Happens to be this one.
Yeah. So read the next line. It's interesting. It's like the Ritva conceives of this. You're doing a kinyan is an implicit tanai. It's like an implicit stipulation or an implicit waiver of right that you're doing away with your Torah granted right of reneging. See that? So you might actually say here there's a little bit of a tension between the two different lines in the Ritva. The first line seems to say that the right to renege is limited to only those cases of poel shel Torah. Right? And the Torah's paradigm of a poel is somebody who's not hired with a kinyan. And so the Torah's special allowance for a poel to renege is limited to the Torah's conception of employment relationship, i.e. one that's not governed by a kinyan. And then you'll argue, well, if there is a kinyan, then it's a stronger kind of relationship that doesn't have the Torah's special privilege of reneging. Just the gzeiras hakasuv k'li b'nei Yisrael avadim doesn't apply there. And the next line, it sounds like the Ritva is pivoting in a different direction, right? What does the next line sound like? V'chol ki aigavna t'ayim mamon hu shekayim, right? It's like, oh, if you did a kinyan, then we have to surmise that the reason why you're doing a kinyan is to waive the right to renege that the Torah gives you. So it's an interesting tension. Does everybody see the tension? There's a way to reconcile them, right? The latter line suggests that, oh, you always have that right to renege, just you're waiving it through performing a kinyan, right? No.
It seems like like an ordinary poel is disadvantaged, and that's why the Torah gives him this right. But once you enter this formal agreement, so then it seems that like the imbalance of power is kind of being mitigated to a certain extent, and so that's why there would be you waive your right to.
Maybe, you know, maybe there's, you have like greater, you're saying you have like greater job security or something once there's a kinyan, and, you know, kind of like, maybe like a la the tour that, you know, you get a windfall by breaching sometimes. And so part of that is that you also lose certain rights when there's a kinyan, like by locking yourself in. Yeah, that's very possible. We'll have to see philosophically, why does it make sense that you lose this right to renege? You're giving a partial account at least, right? You're trying to motivate it by saying, well, maybe the poel's gaining something by having a more secure relationship, and concomitant with that, he has to give away some of his privileges. That's the suggestion here. Yeah, Adam.
So it's an interesting aspect. Case specifically, you know, the case of cloth. That case of cloth, when you work on it, like the poel has the rights to the actual cloth.
Which case are you talking about?
In the case of just working with cloth, and giving in the wool to
the Ayin Vav case.
Oh, the Ayin Vav case?
Yeah. You know the case of which was talking about.
Blah, blah, blah. Are you quoting something from his tshuva or stam? You're saying from the case in the Gemara.
I mean, he mentioned this as the case in the tshuva, but I was like, stam, like, there's Indian, like, I never who work with wool. When someone else would be happy, you are, like, you retain extra wool.
Yeah, you're Kona or something. Yeah. So you're saying that there are other privileges that
come. Yeah, like, I'm wondering, like, what's... I mean, otherwise, if you're saying, once I get the wool, then that's a kingdom that's somehow jobbing.
Right.
Wouldn't we see power to
that? I see what you're saying. You're saying that there's got to be something...
Right.
Why is the receiving of the wool itself significant? So I just want to point out that it's true that the Ritva said that in his Chidush Manayim Vav. He talked about Mashiachas HaTzemer. In the Tshuva, Kofiyat Zayin, he just refers to Kol Shen Eshtaveh B'Kinyin L'Tfuyah Milsa Asa. Right, so it would be any Kinyin, I think. Even if it was a Kinyin Shtar or a Kinyin Sudar. Kofiyat Zayin is more of a Poel case. The tshuva.
Tshuva is really about poel. I mean, the case of Nitzkar L'Shem 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 sounds like a... I mean, it sounds like a
poem. Yeah.
It sounds like a year-long contract. As opposed to the first Ritva, that one's about...
More of a kabbalah.
Like an Uman. Like an Uman almost always a kabbalah.
Yeah, we'll talk a lot about the distinction between a Uman and a kabbalah.
I think that's why the Kinyan is
a poel also. Yeah, it could be.
It's not about the Ha'yadah and Yishtabed Uman.
That's right. Right. My response to you is just, Adam, is that I don't think we should hang the Ritva's position on Mashiachas HaTzemer per se, because I think it would apply to any kinyan that was performed.
Mm-hmm. The right. Question is why?
Yeah, why should that be? Right. So the Ritva is trying to give us an account. You know, the Ritva here seems to have two theories. One is just that the Torah's granting of this privilege to the Poel only applies in the Torah's conception of the Poel, which is one without a kinyan. And then secondly, the Poel explicitly waived his right. We have to interpret his doing a Kenyan as a waiver of his right. And you can make whatever Tanai you want. So, yes, the Torah gives you a right to renege, but you could also forfeit that right voluntarily. Those are the two theories I think that the Ritva has. Right? Okay. In line with this idea of the Ritva, and Yoni is going to tell us this. Anybody read the Broid article yet? No? You read it, right? So Broid makes a big deal.
Within the Ritva, I'm not persuaded by your reading of the Tshuva of the Ritva. Oh, I do think you have different models when you look at the Chidushim.
Okay.
When you look at Metzia, the phrase is like, "She'im nitzchai v'poel v'kinyin reham alachim v'kalef alayhen."
Right. Now they're obligated, right.
Doesn't look quite like it's a Tanakh.
Right, it sounds like, if anything, when they do a kinyin, they're accepting a greater responsibility.
Right.
When you do a kinyan, you're waiving your special right.
Yeah, that's right. Right.
They
could be hand in hand.
Yeah, you could read I and Hay on that as tonight too. You have to explain why. In time of one hand.
Yeah, and the Ritva really thinks that he's existed because this is the end. You know, well, I already wrote this in the Ra'ah and the Kedusha, and it's like.
He is gesturing towards.
So, yeah, he at least thinks that he's not doing that.
Right.
But he's wrong.
Why do you disagree with my reading of the Tshuva?
I just think you can only get to that conclusion if you stop reading in the middle of a sentence. And I don't like doing that.
If you get to which?
You can only get to this like essential thing if you stop reading after the sentence, after the phrase, Kidin Polish Al Torah. But you have to keep reading.
Right, you're saying just read the whole thing holistically.
Yeah.
Right? Meaning.
You still have to resolve the thing.
I don't think you pass the Pagina Dibur, though,
sure. You still have to resolve the tension, though.
Yeah, but why do you think it's not so much Pagim Dibur? I'm just saying just that he's the two parts of the sentence point in different direction. Or it's even the two different sentences.
No, I'm just saying in case A and in case B, and then he explains the reason.
He's saying that explain your position.
The right of Chazara only applies in case A, in the case of a Mira, but not in case B, in the case of a Tanai, but in the case of a Kinyan, because a Kinyan is a Muslim.
But why do you have to view, once you think the first thing, that the privilege to renege only exists?
There's no first thing. He's just in the middle of a sentence. It only applies to one case, not the other.
Okay, but he shouldn't even have put in this thing about Kedin Poel Shel Torah.
Well, he has to counter the argument of the Shoah. The Shoah is saying, well, look, the Torah offered a way out. It looks like a way out. He says, yes, there is a way out, but that's one case and not all cases.
Right.
And that's here's
fair.
Why.
I could see that. Yeah. Good. Bottom of page 5.
Sorry, I interrupted. You were about to talk about the Broid article.
Oh, yeah. If you look at the Broid article, it's just interesting. he makes a big deal about Torah granting the special right to Poalim to back out, and that's because the Torah doesn't want anybody to be stuck in an employment relationship, etc., etc. We'll talk more about it later. That's going to run into really problematic difficulties when all these Rishonim say that, oh, but if you do a Kenyan, then you could back out. As you see, the Breit article wants to hang a lot on the Torah's conception of employment relationships and contracts on the basis of the right of a poel to renege. But if it's the case that the right to renege only exists when there's no Kenyan, it's going to be much more difficult to view this Zechus HaPoel Lachzor as framing the halacha's conceptions of all contractual relationship.
Or right, the first reading of the rich law, which is that
Poel Shel Torah.
And
then, yeah.
And then you can read this contractual.
Or it's only when there's a specific waiver of right or something.
And the Breit article is referring to the
Torah's defaults. Right. Yeah, it would be the default position of the Torah, not what the special Tanai overcomes. Yeah, so we'll look at that. But it definitely shifts what's the default and versus what you can do with the halachic tools at your disposal. Consistent with this idea of the Ritva and Kinyan, so just notice the Pisrei Choshen on the bottom of 5. So this is the first footnote in the Perek Yud Aleph on Tzchiras Poalim. Look what he says. Ben, you want to read it for us? Or?
Sure. Shepol yachol lasnos shelo yuchal latar. The imza kimatanar.
Kimasna masha kaza batora.
Kevan she'ein gufo kanoi.
Yeah. So what's he quoting him as saying? He's saying that it's a poel, so it's effective for you to make a tanai with your employer that you're not allowed to back out. Right, so let's assume that the Torah says a poel could always renege. I don't want to hire a worker that could renege, so I contract in a special tanai that this relationship does not allow you to back out. So is that permissible? Is that masna mash kasuba Torah, or is it mutter? He wants to say it's okay. Why? Yeah, not clear what that means, right? I think what he wants to say is that
it's saying that you're not that if you took away the ability to quit, then that would turn you into a kanoi goat, and you're not allowed to make that?
Yeah. Right, then it would be masna mashakasa batora. Right, meaning?
Because then you'd be making a kanoi, and he's saying you can't do that.
Yeah, I think he thinks that if a poel were generally considered gufo kanoi, then you wouldn't be allowed to take away, through a tanai, his right to renege.
Would not. If it was gufo kanoi, you wouldn't be able to?
Right, take away his right to renege.
Why?
Because then he would be like violating an isser of being an eved.
What does the drasha apply to then?
What?
What does the drasha apply to? The Gemara says you can be chol there because so what does the drasha apply to?
I think he wants to say that even if the worker didn't have a right to renege, he would still not be an eved.
Sure, but that's not the drasha. The drasha is peacefully saying that you can retract because of this drasha. So,
how do you avoid that with person not? Because he's saying that the Kilibide Israel Avadim, Velo Avadim Lavadim, shouldn't be interpreted literally. Meaning, it's not like you would be a real bona fide Eved absent this privilege to renege. You would be something weaker, you know, which the Torah doesn't want you to be in that position. But even without this special zchus, you're still not an Eved. You're not Gufo Kanoi. And that's why you could contract around it through a tanai. I think that's the argument that he's making. Now, it's not obvious because we actually saw a lot of Achronim in the beginning of the year and the Marami Rittenberg who actually defended the view that a poel is gufo kanoi. Right? Remember this? So it sounds like he thinks that whether you could contract around the poel's privilege to renege depends on whether you think a poel himself is actually a kind of an eved. If yes, then you're not allowed to contract around it because the Torah doesn't allow a poel to be locked into avdus interminably. He always has to have this ability to exit at minimal cost. If you think a poel is not really gufo pranoi, so he's never really like an eved, right? So you don't have such a pessimistic view of the employment relationship, then, you know, the Torah wants to minimize his exit costs to make him as less of a, as more distant from an eved as possible. But you could contract around it because, you know, it's just a bad position to be in. It's not as egregious as being actually gufo pranoi. I think that's the idea that the Zera MS is getting at. Okay? And I'm not sure what this I think the Pesach Choshen here is commenting the lechora nira midivri ha'achronim sheyesh bazeh iser avdos. I think he's saying that no, it sounds actually from a lot of achronim that but for the poel's a privilege to renege, the poel is actually considered to be an eved. Right? So I think that's the Pesach Choshen's comment resisting the suggestion of the Shub Zera MS. Okay, any comments on that little point? Okay. Now the Shach, well...
It seems to me that the point may be a little more technical than that. You know, the Ritva goes through this little section in the middle there where it talks about, the time of the Mammon, because these are all really Mammonist issues. And so the Torah has default rules for all sorts of Mammonist issues.
Right, you could contract around them, right.
Once it's gufo pranoi, it's no longer a Mammonist issue. It's yuchsin issue, so whatever other kind of issue it is, it's around there. And that's the kind of issue you can have. So I don't know if it's being a claim about how analogous to Eved versus not Eved, so much as a point just about what a time can be called.
You're talking about the Shub Zera MS.
Yeah.
Well, I think the only reason why a Tanai would not work is if we're in Gufo Kanoi land, which now makes it into kind of Yoredei of Mamon.
Right, but my point is, I don't think it has anything to do with, once you're in Yoredei land, then the Poles really like an Eved, and then you run into certain moral issues about freedom. It's once you're in Yisrael Heter land, the power of contracts doesn't allow you to get out of there. And even if you were still incredibly distant from your status as an Eved, so even if Eved would love people, that way.
But there still could be an Isser involved.
Because once you're dealing with Isser Heter issues, you don't have the power of contract.
So then why does it all hang on Gufo Kanoi?
Because when it's love Gufo Kanoi,
there's no way.
Then we treat your right to be Choser as a Mammon right that you could waive or not waive.
Yeah, so.
And once Gufo Kanoi is no longer considered an issue of Mammon, it's.
So I think we're on the same page, just what I'm calling Eved land, you're calling Gufo Kanoi land, yeah. Right? So I think we're largely in agreement on this point. The only question is there a way to see Gufo Kanoi as triggering an Isser without associating it with Avdus?
Yeah, but you got any different arguments, though. No? Argument that you're arguing tomorrow is because he's not actually over it.
Right.
Because he's not actually gufo
Kanoi.
So therefore,
right.
He didn't actually violate the Isser.
Correct.
While you're saying that, no, he might have violated the Isser, but because it's not gufo Kanoi, therefore it's Darshan Mammon, and you can't be mocking around Darshan Mammon.
I thought you wanted to say once there's an Isser, it's no longer Darshan Mammon. No?
Right. Once it's in gufo Kanoi land, we treat it like a
Isser.
Personal status,
and therefore you can't be mocking around it.
Yeah.
My
point was that it has nothing to do with whether or not it's analogous or not analogous to an Eved and the relationship between a Pole and Eved. None of that matters.
No, that's the thing. So each one of our question of did you violate the Isser or not? And Yair's question is not a question of did you violate the Isser, but rather or not is this a din Mammonos, which can be Mammon, or is this a din Isser, which you can't be Mammon?
No, I disagree. I think even you would say that if I did not make a Tanai, if I did not make a Tanai, you'd run into the same issue of violation of whatever Avadim Avadim means by not allowing the whole to be Choser, whether or not it's people coming here or not, I think, within your conception.
I lost you on that last point.
It's okay. It's not so important.
I agree with Yoni's point characterizing Yair's position that it's less about whether you've violated the Isser and more about whether this is the kind of thing that you can't make a Tanai on because it's a dvaris or not a dvar malon. I agree with that.
Okay, so I don't. So I'm saying. So then, whether who, I don't know who is ascribing this to you, but I would point out that there's two different ways of understanding the zera and this claim. Saying one claim is to argue that this isn't a dvar. This isn't a dvar shemam. Or sorry, it's not an issue of hetero issue. Or it's an issue with the dvar shemam because of gufo kadon, and therefore you can make conditions around it. Like whether or not, you know, categorically you're allowed to do so.
Right.
And then the second clip, a different possible reading of Zarema is that you never violated the Isser because it never actually is Google Kunra. The Isser itself is one of Vadim, 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 and it's not actually an evidence, so therefore we never actually violated it.
Right.
There's no need for this not.
Right. So I see this more as about whether you have the power to make a Tanai, which depends on whether it's a Dvar Mammon or a Dvar Isser. Because that just sounds, the language is Shapol, Yachal Lahasnos, Ve'enza Kemasna Masna Masha Batorah, and he's worried about whether the restriction of Masna Masha Kasa Batorah applies, which is going to depend on whether it's a Dvar Mammon or a Dvar Isser. He's not so much worried about just the brute fact as to whether you violate an Isser. Right? So I think my disagreement with Yair is really just about whether, you know, do you have to translate Gufo Kanoi in terms of an Isser Avdus, or could it be a sui generis Isser land, Yeridea territory of Gufo Kanoi?
Could it be both categories of Esser's and Isser, of the Mazahim, also their implications for one who is not an Ebed, such as Gemara and the Dafyot?
Yeah, I think you could. I think both those are consistent with each other. So you don't have to speak exclusively in Eved language, and so I agree with that. So I'm not particular here on. I agree with Yair's formulation that it's what's significant here is the Masna Masha Kasa Batorah. I'm just cashing out generally the idea of Gufo Kanoi in terms of proximity to Avdus. All right, so ready? Good at that? Okay. The Shach, very important Shach in Shin Lamed Gimel, Tifat and Yadalid, the Taz also in Shin Lamed Gimel, Gimel, they both are very upset with this view of the Ritva. They think that the distinction between with a kinyan and without a kinyan is not relevant to the Gzer Sakasu of Kili B'nei Yisrael Avadim V'lo Avadim L'Avadim. Adam, did you see the shot?
No.
You didn't get to see it yet?
We'll see it right now.
Okay, nice. He quotes the Ritva, and he just says that it's a Shitas Yachid. I'll read you here in the third line in the Shach on page 6. Hufian Yezdaiti, Nira Sheshar Kol Aposkim Shalochil Gubakach, Lo Sri Lehachi. No one else holds like the Ritva. Mechener Lufian Yezdaiti Iker. Then he says, and this is reminiscent of the Shoel in the Shut Ritva. Vigam mitaima de li b'nei Yisrael avadim, if we consider the very source of v'lo avadim l'avadim, mashma de v'chol inyan yuchal achzer bo. So he's saying, look, just look at the pasuk. It says, k'li b'nei Yisrael avadim v'lo avadim l'avadim. It's not qualified. And presumably that rationale should apply to all cases. Right? The Torah doesn't want you to be like an Eved. It wants to always minimize exit costs for a worker. That rationale, or that gzeiras hakasuv, should apply with equal force to an employee with a kinyan. Right? The Torah always wants to give you, wants to minimize exit costs for a worker. I think that's it's a very strong argument. Then he quotes the Rivash in Shimon and Simon Taf Ayin Vav. We actually saw this Rivash earlier in the year. This is the important Rivash about a chazin and aschal samalach as a kinyan. Now the Rivash says explicitly, and here's the underlying section: Hapol yochal lachzer bo leolam afilu hiskel hamalacha vafilu bekinyan mishum dechsev ki li b'nei Yisrael avadim. So even if he's meshavir asma bekinyan, so the poel has the ability to back out. Okay. Any comments on this? Anybody have thoughts on the Shach versus the Ritva here? Look, the Broid article argument is clearly sympathetic with the Shach, right? You think it's just a substantive principle that the halacha is always going to give you this right to renege.
He makes an argument in the middle.
Yeah.
Quoting based on the Rush, who said that by a Kabbalah, that the Meshicha, you have clean Meshicha, clean Umna, so the Kabbalah, you can't be called anymore, but you can do for a Poa. So he says, the Dochak, therefore, the Chalak is Meshicha, the Kenyan. The whole Dochak, you're right in the middle.
Yeah.
And if the rule is by Meshicha, passed by the Rush, that you still can be called despite that going to Meshicha, so too is reached by other Kenyan as well. Which I think that argument is explicitly disputed by the
Shvaz Yaakov. Yeah. That's exactly right. So and I think the Shvaz Yaakov is taking issue with the Shach's argument.
Right. One of the things you pulled apart.
100%. So let's take a look at that. Let's take a look at that Shvaz Yaakov. It's an interesting question for the Shach, by the way. Does the Shach think that you can't waive your right to renege?
Looks like it, right?
It does look like it. Meaning he would have to disagree with the contention of the Ritva that will construe your kinyan as a tnai shel mamon to waive your right. Right. So the Shach saying, A, the Torah just always gives you this right to renege, and B, it's not the kind of right that you could alienate.
Well, this question is tonight in general. At what point do we say that if you condition your contract in certain ways, at what point are you just no longer defined as a poet?
You're just a specialized.
I don't want rule A, I don't want B, I don't want C. Like, at what point are you still a poet?
What are you even?
You're just like some, undefined, well, self-defined, I guess.
Yeah. I'm a friend doing work for free for you with certain obligations.
You don't fit within any of those categories because you simply take yourself out of them.
Right.
You're not a poa with exceptions, you're just not a poa.
Right. But I'd say the halacha is generally likes to put things into boxes. You know, so do you fall into the poa box or do you fall into the
tnai shel mamon?
What?
Even when you have to say tnai shel mamon, maybe make it tnai.
Yeah. Right, so I think that's true. That even within Tanayim, the halacha says you're a poel with a certain Tanai to back out. You're a kablan with a certain, not that, you made so many Tanayim that you're just a friend with what they'd call in law schools, like certain bundles of rights and duties owed to somebody else.
Well, right. I'm just saying if the shop could admit that you could contract around it, but at that point you're no longer like a poel.
The Shach seems to also be bringing the imaginary chaf into the pasuk, like anything that bears any resemblance in any possible way can be added. So any form of you doing anything for someone else automatically has the idea of the imamim.
You say like even if you're not a poel, you're still like
an imam. Anytime there's any like Indian evidence there.
Yeah, that would be a very strong reading. I think we're going to
watch. That's how I feel about it.
What?
That's just how I feel.
From reading the Shach.
Read a response.
Read a response.
Is it what?
To read a response.
Right. I mean, you'll see, the problem with that argument is going to be that
post-colonial.
When you read
I don't know. There's something to be said for the formulation b'chol inyan yachalachos. And you're like, the idea that you will ever be in a position of inability to be chozer is
contrary to halacha.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, the halacha just really wants to.
But I kind of like, what would a scenario be where you're not a poel, but you're still bound to do work and not chozer? Like, I don't know what that means. But.
Meaning.
Notify halacha.
Come. There are
also, if you are away from.
Once you're a kabbalah, these dinim don't apply, which is what we'll see soon.
I hear.
Also, logically, the further you are away from being an eved, more logically, you would have the right to be chozer.
But that cuts both ways, because if you think the right to be chozer is a way of distinguishing you from an eved, then it's only once you're in eved territory, then the halacha has to do something to empower you, to help you extricate yourself. Right. Whereas if your responsibilities are so weak that you're not even close to an eved, the halacha is not going to step in to empower you to back out. So it could cut the other way there.
Right.
We'll see. We'll see that formulation explicit. The Kabbalah example might be a good example of that. Okay. the Taz agrees with the Shach that just the rule applies across the board. You always have the privilege to be chozer. Good. The Shvus Yaakov, and this is what Yoni is pointing out, this is on page 7. And Chelek Beis Siman Kuf Pei Dalid offers an interesting distinction. So he was asked again about when does the poel have a right to back out. It was a case of one person was investing money for somebody else, and at one point he just wanted to back out. And the point is that the investment was done with a kinyan, right? And so does the kinyan vitiate the privilege to renege? Ben, you have to have some morals, though.
You have to do the pre-wedding weight loss.
Right.
Check the West.
It'll motivate you to go to the gym, eat some, and then you'll feel like that. So what does he say? He quotes the Ritva. He quotes the Rivash. And he says...
Just for context, the assumption is that one can't renege on an investment, on a promise to invest.
So he was basically made a kinyan to be a poel to invest this guy's money.
Oh, so I'm your
investor.
Yeah,
so you're my worker, basically. Sure, and like a financial advisor or broker or something. I'll assume that's a poel relationship, which is what the Shvus Yaakov is assuming. Well,
interesting.
Yeah, you can see it. Look at the Shaila. He says, at the very beginning of the Shaila, Od Bala Fanin Ruven Shalava Mishimam Sach Ma Batoras Iska Altsada Heter. So it's like a loan with a Heter Iska. Ashana Achas Venazas Eshtar Iska Kimin Hagam Nichta Bishtar Iska Sheachim Yimshoch Yoser Yim Cholofanim. If it extends past the time, then you just roll over the terms, etc., etc. And then he says, look at the underlying section in the Shaila, Ruven Toen Sheyucha Lachzer Meiska Filu Tochazman. Because Reuven says that he's allowed to back out in the middle based off the idea of Kili b'nei Yisrael avadim v'lavadim l'avadim, a poel always has the right to renege. So he quotes, the Shvus Yaakov quotes the Ritva, right? The Ritva's position that if there's a kinyan, you can't back out. And he says, look here.
The case is he got a loan and he's trying to poel.
Well, he's a loan. He got a loan with a heter iska, which means that he's actually supposed to be investing the money. So... halachically speaking, he's an investor. And he says, and halacha says an investor is a poel, which we'll actually talk about later, who exactly is a poel versus a kavlan versus a shutaf. And then he says that maybe there's a distinction here. Look at the last underline in the Shvus Yaakov. Yoni, you want to read that for us? So he quotes the Shach. Remember, the Ritva said that once there's a kinyan, you can't back out. The Rivash explicitly disagreed. The Rivash said that if there's a kinyan, you could still back out. And he wants to make shalom between them. He wants to say that maybe they're talking about two different kinds of cases. So what's the argument here, Yoni? Yeah. So he wants to say that... That what?
There's a gemota in case of the reverse gemota in case of kinyan kesef and shtar.
Yeah. Exactly. There are two different ways to consummate an employment relationship with a kinyan. One is with these more, you might say, transactional kinds of kinyanim. Like, oh, you did a meshicha on the tzemer that you were going to work on. That's not like a real kinyan. That's like he acquired the tzemer that he's going to work on. So it's like a weak kinyan that maybe consummates an employment relationship. But if you did a kinyan on the person, on the poel himself, right? So if you did a kinyan, a kesef and shtar, timahani liknos, Gufo be'evet ivri, then everybody would agree, even the Rivash, that the poel can't renege under those circumstances. So it sounds like he's saying, look, a kinyan can do different things. Kinyan could just be a way of strengthening the employment relationship. In those cases, the poel will still have the privilege to be chozer. Or a kinyan could turn you into a quasi-eved, a kufo kanoi. If that's what you did, then you lose, you forfeit, you waive your right to reneg, because then you're mishabed yourself as if you're a servant, and the servant doesn't have the power to back out in the middle.
Would you say this specifically by poel and not by kablon?
Yeah, I think this is probably, well, we'll see, a kablon, yeah, a kablon is not going to have a special privilege to back out in the first place.
Then you would have to understand the first individual that we saw as being a kablon.
Or he's saying that the first ritva.
Well, he has a mishicha on the semer.
That's right. So the first ritva said that if you have mishicha on the semer, then you can't back out. Right. That's right. That's right. Do you see Adam's good point? Adam's just saying that it's the. What?
He said it before.
Oh, Yoni, you said that?
You did enough for me to turn Kabbalah.
No, that's true, but. No, but you're pointing out here that the Shlis Yaakov is trying to argue that the Ritva would agree to the Rivash. So, yeah, that you can't back out if there was a Kinyan Aguf, right?
Right.
But yet the Ritva himself seems to say that if there was just Meshicha Satsemer, you can't back out, right? So that's a bit of a problem for the Shvus Yaakov's analysis.
It's exactly Kabbalah.
Right. If that point is limited to a Kabbalah, then it may not be a problem.
Here, he's talking about
right. That's true.
We also think that the Ritva is a max case. He's making the Rivash and Moda and the Ritva. He's arguing now that everyone is moded, and in some cases
you cannot back out.
Right, and he's saying that even the Rivash, who was the Baal Shita, that you can always be moded in case whether there was a Kinyan Kesef or Shtar, then you can't be chozer.
There's one way. He's not taking a position on when the Ritva would be moded.
Yeah,
he's just taking a position on when the Rivash would be moded.
Yeah,
right, Lahachmir. Right. You know, it's interesting because it sounds like he wants to say, touching back on that theme earlier in the year, that if you did a Kinyan that's Roy to turn you into an Eved Ivri, then we're going to view the Poel himself as a kind of Eved Ivri who doesn't have this right to be Chozer. Right? I mean, that's like a very strong position.
I'm saying Eved Ivri gets to have Roy.
Right.
Well, in a way, you can also view the whole idea of Eved Ivri being the person himself about his conflict.
Yeah, Giron Kesef. Right. But there he would actually have to like front the payment and buy himself out, which is different from this case where you could just breach without a penalty at all.
Well, it depends if you pass the employee.
In which case?
I mean, in our case, I think it's not like gets a rubby dosa.
Right, so where we pass on for Hamid, though.
Yeah.
Right, contrary to Cole's, Cole had this weird post, Cole's not here, but.
Oh, the Torah seems to be passing by
That was the Kohl's point. So I don't think the Torah is passing Rav Dosa, he's passing Chachamim Yado Hal Yona in a way that's parallel to how Rav Dosa calculates.
So he is high for any Nezek or whatever you want to.
Yeah, that is true, but only in the case where it's to his benefit. Right? That's when the costs go up, go
okay,
down.
Fine. So then the
which is really the opposite.
Right? Fine. So the Shomzara who passed it.
Hold on. We'll talk more about that stuff. Okay, I think that's really what I wanted to cover in for this question of whether a Kinyan could circumvent it. Let me turn your attention now to the Chavos Yair. Just a short comment by the Chavos Yair on Kuf Mem, who has an interesting observation also. So he generally agrees. Let's see. Yeah. He says, look here in the second paragraph in the Chavos Yair, in the bottom of page 8. He says, Yeshlomar delo nechelku ritva v'shach rak le'inyan chazaras poel alzman kotzar. Ma she'en kein le'yoser mi gimel shanim gam haritva, I guess yodelo or Yeshlomar shemode te'yochol lachzar afilu b'kinyan. So the Shul Chavos Yair wants to say that the Ritva thinks you could back out, you could waive your right to you could waive your right to quit if it's a short-term contract, because then you're not analogous to an Eved. Right? So if you're not analogous to an Eved, you can waive your right to renege. But if you entered into a long-term employment relationship such that you're more like an Eved who has a long-term employment, then everybody would agree, even the Ritva, that you can't waive that right to renege. Because the more you're actually like an Eved, the more the halacha insists on your having this right to renege.
So he's just defining gufo kanoi sort of according to the Ritva in some way.
He's defining, what do you mean defining?
We were saying, Yoni's sort of question was, isn't part of the definition of gufo kanoi, if you have part of not being gufo kanoi is that you have the privilege to back out?
Yeah.
Saying, no, it's really about whether you worked for more than 3 years.
Sounds like it. Yes, that's true. So the more like in, I guess, in substance, your employment looks like an Eved, the more the halacha is going to insist that you be different from him by having this privilege of reneging.
Right.
Notice how this is in tension with that point of the Chavos Yair, who seemed to think the more you did a kinyan that's capable of turning you into an actual Eved, right, your Kanoi, Bishtar, and Keseth, the less you're going to have a right to be Chozer. Right, he thought the Rivash, who generally thinks you have a right to be Chozer, will acknowledge that if you did a Kinyan HaMoil Le'Eved Ivri, that would forfeit your right to be Chozer. So there's a bit of a tension here in the Rishonim, whether you think, oh, there's a way where you... there's a bit of a tension here. Some people think the following. They say, a Poel is always entitled to renege. But if you become an Eved, like the Shvas Yaakov says, through a Kinyan HaMoil, then you don't have a right to renege. Because that privilege of Kelibin Yisrael Avadim only applies to Poalim, not to Avadim. Then there's another camp, and this is really what this Chavos Yair is getting at, that cuts the exact opposite way. And they say, the more you are similar to an Eved, right, the more you border on Eved territory, the more it's crucial for you to have a right to back out, because the halacha insists on your not being an Eved. So the longer your employment term, the more you have a disability, as a Hofeldian disability, from waiving your right. Yoni.
This is pretty similar to our earlier study about just gufo kanoi in general.
Yes.
And we were discussing then, like, how much gufo kanoi, how much not gufo kanoi, how many years, like, part of, like, the thing was asking this question, like, how much do we care about the poem almost being identical, and we're kind of okay with that?
Yes.
Or how much do we care as opposed to it?
Correct. What's new here is the application of this special privilege of Chazara to that question.
Yeah, because, like, there's an application, like, this earlier. To
correct.
The earlier we saw.
Do you think that the more you're like an Eved, the more the halacha insists on your being different and minimizing exit costs, etc.? Or to say the opposite, do you have the freedom of contract to enter into an Eved relationship? And in certain cases, you basically entered into that kind of relationship such that you no longer have the ability to be Chozer.
Can I clarify for myself?
Yes.
Okay. It seems that everyone's going to have to concede that there is some line past which you stop being a Poel, start being an Eved, and no longer have a right to Chazara. The question is only, is there any territory before you become Eved that's still sufficiently Eved-like that puts you in that position? I mean, some Poskim will say that only when you're an Eved are you an Eved, and anything short of being an Eved, you wish to distance from being an Eved.
Yeah.
Others will say, no, there's a threshold, there's a spectrum of Poel to Eved. There's some line on that spectrum past which you're so heavy that even if you're not really an Eved,
yes,
and start treating you a little bit like one.
That's right. So the Shvus Yaakov,
right,
is in that latter category.
Yeah.
Right? He's saying if you have an employment relationship which is consummated through a kinyan that could turn you into an Eved Ivri, then you're basically past the crucial threshold of being in Eved land, such that you lose your right to Bichozer. That's the Shvaz Yaakov, right?
Yeah.
And Chavos Yair is saying the opposite. Right? He's saying, if you cross a crucial threshold, let's say, as defined by the number of years of your contract, such that you're bordering on Eved land, the halacha insists on your being different than having minimal exit costs and a right to renege, etc., etc.
Right, right. My point is like, it's not like for the rich, but there's like some like change that happened, or like, or for the Chavos Yair, there's a change that happened after 3 years. It's just we have this like magnetic thing that like pushes us away from being an Eved, and there are multiple ways to like try to breach that threshold.
Right.
And too many of them, and you're too close, it pushes you away.
Right. That's the Chavos Yair.
That's the Chavos Yair.
And the Shvaz Yaakov says, no, like sometimes you can breach that. And
right. And once you breach it, there's a thing on the other side.
That's right. You're stuck on that. You've been pushed across, and you're stuck now in Eved land with rules of the rules of being an Eved.
But even short of being a true Eved.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Does that sound like correct to you guys?
It is interesting. The Chavos Yair has like a threshold.
He has vegetal butt.
He doesn't really define.
Right, but he does say more than 3 years. Right, right. More than 3 years. Earlier in the year, to be fair, we saw that a lot of poskim think that it's prohibited for an Eved to enter into a contract for more than 3 years, because then he'd be violating Kili B'nai Yisrael Avadim. So I think that's the halacha that he's building off. Okay?
It's not only for a deal, since the original case would be more than 2 years.
Yeah, it's consistent with the... It's a nice arrow. Okay.
Why 3 years?
Why 3 years? So it has to do with the pasuk of the Torah defines an Eved who works for 6 years as double the amount of years of a poel.
Okay.
So Chazal infer that 3 years are... Yeah.
So I will fall 6 years.
Okay, right. That's where it comes from. You'll see, it's very interesting. So you can look back at the shiurim from the beginning of the year. I think we spent a nice amount of time on this. Okay, so we're going to stop here. Let me just forecast. So for next time, what I want to discuss are other exceptions. So we'll discuss two other important exceptions where you don't have this right to renege. The first is, what if your work is Avodas Hashem? Right, so like a chazin or a rabbi or something. Or Malamed maybe. So are you considered Eved La Hashem and not Avadim La Avadim? Meaning you shouldn't have a right to renege. That's a discussion of the Shvaz Yaakov on the bottom of page 9 and the Chavos Yair on 10. And then we'll talk about, what if you're trying to back out of one employer only to work for another employer? So do you say that you don't have the right to leave one Avdos just to be an Eved to somebody else? Or do you say, no, that itself is an expression of like your freedom that you could choose who you're going to work for? So see, that's an interesting tension in the postgame here. So that's what I'll pick up with. All right, shkayach, everyone.